It's time again for Health Talk on KFAR Radio. 30 minutes of healthy conversation about practical ways to improve your quality of life. Now, from the all-new White Spruce Medical, here's your host, Dr. Scott Looper.
Good afternoon, Fairbanks. Welcome to Health Talk. My name is Dr. Scott Looper, and I'm your host today as we talk about health, how to get it, and how to keep it. With me today is Ben Hughes. Ben is a flight paramedic who works for Guardian Flight here in Fairbanks. And joining us today is Dr. Vika Brewster. Ben has actually come to us through Dr. Brewster's connections. Dr. Brewster, thank you for bringing Ben. Ben, thanks for being here on the show today. I want to let everybody know what we're going to be talking about today is medevac in Alaska. So, Ben, tell us about medevac. What is it?
Alaska is a very unique place in that it's very big, very spread out, and you know, access to critical services that you wouldn't have in the lower 48, where you would have a trauma center or a neuro specialty center or a thoracic surgery center or everything all in one place. We don't necessarily have that here. Burn Center, Seattle. There's hospitals in Anchorage that are kind of encompassing burn care a little bit more, but there are some things that you just can't get in these communities, especially when you get into rural Alaska. You don't have diagnostics, you don't have labs, you don't have really anything, so you might have to come into the hospital in Fairbanks for just like basic services.
Right.
So
there's a lot of specialty in the world. There's places where people are better at doing stuff because there's a lot more population there. They got a lot more opportunity to treat things like burns.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm. And something you have to consider is Fairbanks doesn't have neurosurgery. We don't have cardiothoracic surgery capabilities here. We can emergently stabilize some things in Fairbanks, but for specialty care, you're going to Anchorage. So if you're riding your bike and you hit your head too hard, you're buying a medevac.
Yeah.
You go to the hospital for cardiac catheterization, and you know they have to do cardiothoracic surgical intervention, you're going to Anchorage. Some specialty care you're going to Seattle for. So
basically you're getting on the plane and they're giving you this flight down there.
Yeah.
But it's not so easy. It's not just a plane ride.
Yeah,
here's a ticket. I want you to sit upright in your seat, right?
Right.
No, it's a lot more than that. First of all, they get your lovely companionship,
yes.
Right?
Therapeutic communication and care is my specialty, yeah, for sure. And that is an interesting thing. A bad day can happen very quickly in Alaska. If you're out in the middle of nowhere and you get hurt, you know, it can go from just an amazing experience to, oh, God.
Yeah.
Pretty quickly, and we see that quite a bit.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I'm thinking of a wedding that happened, I don't know, 20 years ago. Mm. They had this beautiful, lovely wedding, and then they're going to leave on a helicopter, and the helicopter came down and picked them up, and ended up getting some kind of wind, flipped over and blew up, and yeah, ruined the day for everybody.
Yeah, yeah, that would certainly do it.
Yep.
For sure.
Yep. So then you get a situation like that, you're out in the boondocks, and you need to get the specialty care. Mm. Then you get called.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Guardian gets called, for example.
Yeah. And pretty much anybody can activate us. We have healthcare providers at these remote facilities that can activate us. We have our providers at the hospital here who can activate us. We have family members out in villages who can activate us if they need us. They don't have any medical care or medical knowledge, but if they, you know, have an index of suspicion that somebody is sick, even without a referral or an accepting physician, we'll go out and get you, like, regardless of whether it, you know, would be normally considered medically necessary. We'll figure that out, you know.
So to walk us through the process, like, how does it usually work? We'll talk about exceptional situations later, but
yeah,
just like the normal process, how does it usually work?
So the normal process, we have a dispatch center that's actually based out of Utah, and that's what they do. They do basically medevac dispatch, and they have a whole wall. It looks like something out of a sci-fi movie where they have all of our planes and a big map, and they track our locations. And we have
in
Utah.
No kidding.
It's a specialty center that we don't have that in Alaska here. So yeah, it's under Air Methods, I believe. So we used to have a local dispatch, and their resources were fairly limited. So we have like a pool of dispatchers specifically for us. It seems kind of counterintuitive to have our dispatch center out of state, but that's what they specialize in. And it's a learning curve for them as well, because it's hard to understand the scope and the size of Alaska. You look at a map and you can put your thumb in your pinky finger and be like, oh, that doesn't look that far.
Yeah. And it's 743 miles is what that is, right?
last night we went to St. Paul, and in a Learjet going 450 miles an hour, probably more, it took us 2 hours to get out there. We get the patient, hour 45 back to Anchorage. So at the end of the trip, we probably clocked in close to 2,000 miles within the same state, which is, you know.
Right. You've gone over as far as half the way across the United States at 2,000 miles.
Yes.
Yeah. And crossed 17 states.
Yeah. And that's
down in lower 48.
And that's pretty typical for us.
Yeah. I've seen the map thing where they put Alaska on the lower 48 and it stretches from coast to coast.
Yeah. Especially when you're looking at going out to the Aleutians, which we do pretty regularly too.
Yeah. Okay. So somebody calls you guys, and then the call gets forwarded to the dispatch.
Yes.
The dispatch looks at the resources available, what planes, what people, personnel, so on and so forth, and then makes a decision as to who to call specifically. You guys get the call. If you and your team gets the call, you're sitting there, you know, playing, I don't know, video games on.
I'm big on solitaire. huge on it.
Waiting for the call.
Yeah.
And then bam, you guys scramble.
Yeah. So we're fixed wing based. So we don't have a helicopter here, because within Fairbanks a helicopter is fairly impractical because of the speed and the distances that we go. So the nearest village in a helicopter would probably take 45 minutes to an hour, where in our King Air, any place with a runway, the nearest village would be 15 minutes.
Yeah.
We have the capability of going places with a Learjet, which I was saying is we get a speed average of 450 knots out of a Learjet if you multiply it by, 0.15 and add that to the speed. That gives you a speed in miles per hour. So we're pushing a little over 500. The King Air will do about 240 knots, so a little bit slower, but it can get us into shorter runways. So we have fixed wing here, which gives us, you know, the ability to. So our response time is 15 minutes to, you know, be ready to go. So because of that, we have the luxury of being able to respond from like in town, as long as we're in the response distance from the hangar. So you can kind of have a life and still respond. So I don't have to sit in, like in the plane playing. Solitaire for 2 weeks. Fortunately, so as soon as we get activated, we get a text to let us know to get going. Then everything's coordinated. The pilots will check weather, give it a go. Then we have basically an air medical resource management system that we do. So we talk with the pilots. We check with weather. We never tell them about the patient or the patient condition, so that the pilots would possibly base their decision to go. If you have a critical patient or a sick baby, you don't want your pilots making the decision based on that. So we keep them kind of in the dark about what the patient.
Wasn't there an accident fairly recently where a medevac plane crashed because the weather was really bad?
Correct. There was actually a couple.
Now, I hate to talk about this because that's rare.
Lives are
saved with the vast majority, but it's you're always trying to make that decision based on somebody in crisis and the conditions here in Alaska, which a lot of times deteriorate to the point where it's dangerous to fly.
Correct.
Clearly, that's happened where the conditions worsen during the flight, and you know, damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead, and then you know something goes wrong, and that's it. You're out of options at that point.
Yeah, we have a very good safety culture. Kind of the motto around the company is one to say no. So if one person has a feeling, like it could give me a feeling, like we talk about the weather, and they're like, you know, no, because if we get into trouble or we have a bad situation like that, then we're not available to help people after that.
Yeah.
So we're very safe. And with our pilots, they have certain minimums that they have to abide to in order to get in or out. So it's not just willy-nilly pilot discretion. They have to look at the weather, say, okay, this meets minimums, or if it's at minimums, we'll watch it, or put a flight on weather hold. So it's very safe. I have spent thousands of hours, not thousands, is that hyperbolic? I spent a lot of hours in those planes, and I've never felt unsafe with our pilots. And accidents do happen, but weather is one of those things that you can definitely mitigate in order to improve.
You know, accidents happen with ambulances on the way to the hospital,
Definitely way more than airplanes, for sure. Ground transport is probably the most hazardous part of our transport continuum, for sure. So, yeah, it's a possibility, but it's actually very, very safe. Yeah.
So Summit, you get the call.
Yes.
You guys scramble, and then you fly to a village, a close by village, whatever. Mm. And so then the person who needs to be transported is waiting in your facility, ready to go.
That depends. It depends on the health aid, what they have there. So sometimes they'll bring them to the airplane. If they're more stable, sometimes we'll go out to the clinic and stabilize and take them to the airplane. Sometimes we'll go out to somebody's house and have to stabilize them in a small bedroom or something like that. Or maybe they ended up between like the bed and the wall and we have to get them out and stabilize. So it really depends.
So just like regular paramedic. I mean, it's what paramedics do. Yeah, they go in and they help stabilize people for transport.
Yeah.
Just in this case, you're not necessarily going to the hospital or the clinic. You're going to head them to Anchorage or Seattle or wherever,
or
right?
Fairbanks, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the fun part of it. I love the village calls. And I love taking nurses on village calls because that's kind of outside of their kind of comfort zone. But we're both cross-trained. The nurses can do what the paramedics do. The paramedics can do what the nurses do. And that's a really cool part, because as a paramedic, you're generally not trained in, you know, critical care right off the bat. But, you know, we get in there and we're doing, like, invasive pressure monitoring and like advanced cardiac medications and messing with ventilators and starting vasoactive drips and, you know, using sedatives and paralytics. And it's a really broad scope. It's very, very
saving
cool.
People's lives.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what all that stuff is to save you, to get you stabilized so that you won't die in transport.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right.
Yep. And sometimes it's not necessarily saving life. It's you know, the doctors do that. We get them stable. I guess I'm kind of underplaying what we do a little bit.
You're underplaying what you do.
Yeah,
preventing the lack of life.
Yeah.
Yeah. What you guys end up doing is what paramedics do, which is you sit around and you're doing nothing and you're bored until you get the call, and then bam, everybody's on, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're looking for ways to make sure this comes out right.
Yes.
I mean, the thing we haven't talked about is that occasionally you lose somebody in transport or those kind of things. Mm. And that kind of thing, correct me if I'm wrong, but it wears on you. I mean, it's a lose. It's a loss.
Yeah. And kind of the way, I won't say compartmentalize it. The way I kind of think about it is we were the best chance that they had. So you lose somebody, we were the best chance that they had still. We did our best, and, you know, if we didn't show up, they weren't going to make it. We tried our best, and we were the best shot.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it does happen, but we do pretty good. We have a pretty big toolbox with which we can handle a lot of spicy situations.
Yeah. So, okay, so now you get them on the plane. I imagine it takes some training to how to do that. I'm thinking of this, you know, narrow flight of stairs, and you have to go up and twist around the corner. I can't really imagine how you guys do it. There must be some technique.
I would love to bring you to the hangar sometime and show you.
I've actually been to the hangar, but I didn't see anybody. Nobody gave me the tour of how you get somebody on the plane.
We're going to do that.
Okay,
we're going to do that.
I volunteer.
Yeah, we'll do it. We'll load Vika. that'll be a blast. I would love to do that. We have a system, and sometimes it's you don't know what condition the patient's going to be in, so we have different methods for, you know, securing a patient. Vacuum mattresses that will suck a person up into like a burrito and kind of splint their whole body, or blankets or something to move them up into a ramp system that will get them up onto the plane.
Okay.
So that's in my opinion, like one of the more, like, it's a logistical consideration that sometimes, like, again, like I take for granted because I've done it so much. It's like, yeah, you just put them on the plane. I don't know.
Yeah.
You put them on the plane.
Notice since I haven't done it, my brain goes to how do you do it?
Yeah.
This has got to be tricky.
Yeah, very
right?
Very carefully.
Very carefully.
Yeah,
very
and it can get tricky when you have a patient that, especially if you have them on like an advanced intervention, like a balloon pump, which is a pretty big piece of equipment, or a ventilator plus a cardiac monitor with like invasive pressure lines and stuff like that. You have a very short leash. And in the winter, things freeze quickly. We have IV lines going, and if you have a vasoactive in there, if you're supporting blood pressure with like Levofed or epinephrine or phenylephrine or whatever we're using, and you expose that to the cold, at 20 below, that line will freeze in right now.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you don't have
your blood pressure. The drip is now shut off.
Or your sedative is shut off, or this is shut off. So, you know, there's little considerations like that that you have to make throughout transplant.
So how do you guys prevent the lines from freezing?
We have IV pumps that will continuously pump whatever we're. So you take it and you put it under a blanket with them and just don't expose any of the lines to the cold. Then when you get them on the plane, you can hang them so you can monitor them better.
Yeah.
But if you're taking a patient to from a house to the airplane in a dog sled, you put them, and we've done that. Not with a dog team, pulled behind a snow machine. Like I would love. that'd be a blast. I'm holding out for that.
Ben, they make movies about that.
Right, sometimes you wrap a patient up and like you kind of peek in and make sure they're still breathing, but you know, it's sometimes you just have to adapt and overcome, and that makes the job very interesting, and that's why I love it. You know, it's always different.
Okay, so you get them on the plane.
Yes.
You unwrap them.
Yeah, generally.
You hang up the IVs or plug the stuff in that needs to be plugged in.
Yes.
Right? And so now what? You're like ready, steady, go, and you take off on the runway and fly to wherever you need to fly,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and we're basically a flying ICU. Everything that you would have in an ICU, we have everything. We have the capability for like invasive surgical procedures like surgical airways, chest tubes. We have ventilators. We can do advanced airway management. Of course, like Foley catheters for monitoring urine output and things like that. They consider the Foley catheter to be the poor man's swan gans, which is, you know, typically used for measuring hemodynamics. If you're getting urine output and perfusing the kidneys, then you can tell like general hemodynamics based off that.
Yeah, if you're still peeing,
yes,
right?
Correct.
There's hope here, right?
Yeah.
When that shuts off, it doesn't bode well.
Yeah, things start snowballing after that, for sure. So we have a pretty good toolbox, a pretty good pharmacopoeia as well. We have a lot of toys, and I really like having that at our disposal. It's always challenging, and we get to practice like medicine. We have online medical support through our medical directors, and we can contact them if we get in a hairy situation. There are some times when we have to contact them when we're pushing thrombolytics for somebody having a heart attack and we want to try to break up that clot, or if we're doing an invasive procedure like a chest tube, or we have a bad situation, we would contact our medical control to kind of collaborate on that. And they're incredible people.
So there's tons of questions jumping in my mind.
Yes.
It's time for a break.
Yeah.
So I'm going to use discipline here.
Okay.
And do a break and save the questions when we come back. But I just want to give you a heads up on one of the questions. I imagine this ICU inside the airplane tube sitting on the runway and not being used because nobody's sick. And who's paying for all this stuff? So the one part of the thing I'm curious about is how does the money work on this thing? Now, this is not your area of expertise.
It is not.
But I still am curious of what you can say about this. And not only that, but part of the question is going to be is how can we make sure that when people do need it, it's affordable?
Hmm.
That's going to be if you all listening, that's one of the key things here is I'm going to go out on a limb and say this is expensive.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Healthcare unfortunately is expensive.
Yeah. How are we going to be able to afford this if we need this, particularly if you don't have insurance? So keep that in mind. So we'll come back for that one. But for right now, let's do a break, and we'll be back with more Health Talk in a moment.
Don't give up. Good health is possible. We'll be back with more Health Talk.
One in four people will have heartburn this week. One in six suffer from irritable bowel.
Man, this is great.
Thousands more suffer from diseases caused by gut dysfunction and poor digestion. The good news is relief is here. I'm Dr. Scott Looper. My colleagues and I are experts in the effective treatment of gastrointestinal diseases. We are waiting to see you at White Spruce Medical. Call us to make an appointment. Located in the Steese Medical Center here in Fairbanks. Treating the core, living the cure. White Spruce Medical.
When you have an opinion.
In my opinion.
Do you have a new opinion or do you have the same opinion you had before?
A question.
Let me start with question number one.
Here's my question.
Whether you agree.
My compliments to your guests on their accuracy of the statements they've made.
Or disagree.
Oh yeah, you guys think you know.
You guys don't have any idea what you're talking about.
This is your source for news.
This is rocket science and things do happen on this stuff.
And conversation.
It's real and it's fantastic.
From the supermarket to the stock market, follow the business news you can use daily on News Talk 660 KFAR.
Now, more health talk on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com. Here's your host, Dr. Scott Looper.
So welcome back to Health Talk. I'm your host, Dr. Scott Looper, and I'm here today with Ben Hughes and Dr. Vika Brewster. Ben is a flight paramedic who works for Guardian Flight here in Fairbanks. Dr. Brewster is a naturopathic physician who works with me. So, Ben, we're in the – you're describing the process of how a person who needs to get this life flight thing gets picked up, prepared for transport, and then got on the plane. And then what you described is the inside of the plane, which I haven't seen, by the way, looks like it's set up like an ICU with all the bells and whistles that an ICU would have. And then as you're telling me the story, I'm thinking, geez, this has got to cost a lot of money to do this.
Yeah.
So we'll leave the patient on the plane right now as we're flying now. So let's talk about how the money works. So anyways, I can put more specific questions if you want, but just talk to us about the money.
Money's good. People generally like to have money and hold on to the money, in my experience. And
truly.
Yeah, and as somebody within the healthcare system, I know that healthcare can be expensive, and because of that, I'm very resistant to seeing the doctor myself. So I'm like one of those people who is the worst patient. I can empathize with people like that because they come into the hospital and they have something that requires specialty care, and without they come in for maybe just generalized abdominal pain and all of a sudden have to go down to Anchorage for an ERCP or some kind of specialty procedure that they can't do here, and they're now on the hook for a medevac, and I can't necessarily speak to how much that is, but it's not cheap.
So $100,000?
Depending on where you're going, that's not outside the realm of
possibility. Not an unreasonable number, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I can't say that's not an unreasonable number, but it's, but in my mind, but that's a standard within the medevac system. So it's not like we're any more expensive than any other company. And, because of the fact that we're under this larger national umbrella, we can actually keep our prices. And, we work with a lot of insurance providers and, again, this is a little bit outside of my scope for sure, but medevacs and healthcare are expensive, and sometimes that's a
concern. So let's say someone is in a health crisis. I'm sorry, I just have to ask this blunt question.
Yeah.
This is the hard question. Mm. They're in this health crisis. They don't have insurance. They really need to be medevaced out. Are they just screwed? Is there something they can do?
They're not screwed. Fortunately, like I was saying, we are under a national umbrella. We're under a parent organization that has basically medevac operations all over the country, and we work with the federal government. We have a pretty big umbrella, which is fantastic. And because of that, we can actually provide insurance to people who might not have insurance, or even if you do have insurance, you're probably still on the hook for, a pretty significant amount of money. And under this, you pay a $125 membership, a membership fee, then everything is covered. They'll bill your insurance. Any cost outside of that, you're not going to see. If you don't have insurance, you're not going to see it.
So for $125 a month,
A year.
A year?
For everybody.
Holy moly.
For everybody in your house.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's everybody in Alaska should have it. I would hugely advocate for that because
more than anywhere else in the country, because this is a lot of the cost is dependent on the distance you have to go,
yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
You just told us the story about the you had to fly a Learjet out to the Aleutians,
yes.
2,000-mile trip to drop somebody off at the hospital.
Yeah.
That's expensive.
It is expensive. Yeah, and this covers everybody in your household. Your kid's riding their bike, falls down, hits their head, has to go to Anchorage. Covered.
After the show, I'm going to talk to my wife. Get signed up for this dang thing.
You absolutely should.
I'm so glad you're on the show because I really was worried about it as we're talking about this. I'm thinking, isn't it fabulous we have this service that keeps people alive? It's amazing when you need it. Heaven forbid, right? But
right.
If you need it, and I'm thinking, geez, I mean, we have insurance, but still, it's going to cost a fortune. We're, you know, we get 80% coverage or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I hear stories on national radio about people who've been ruined financially by having to do this, and you can prevent that by paying $125 a year for your whole family?
Yes.
Holy moly. Sign me up.
Yeah, I remember a transport I did years ago. It was this very young couple, and, you know, preterm labor with twins. And you're going down to Anchorage, and you're going to the babies are going to stay into the NICU until they're about term. So we're talking maybe a couple months in the NICU with specialty care, plus a medevac, plus whatever care was rendered in Fairbanks. And you're starting off life maybe like $1 million in medical debt.
Yeah.
Can you just wrap your head around that?
God,
like, what do you do about that? And, you know, this is...
You got to keep those babies alive.
You ideally, you should. I think that's a... that's something that in healthcare we get the opportunity to do. And that's so valuable, you know.
Yeah.
Across the continuum of care, and that's why I'm fascinated with what you guys do, because it was so different than what I do.
So, you know, we're doing the same thing in a way, because what we do is we fight the good fight.
Yes.
We work with people, get them in the best shape possible to struggle for health, to overcome the obstacles. You guys are doing the same thing. It's a different kind of game. It's a different pace to it.
Yeah.
But it's really that mindset of push, of work as hard as you can, of do everything possible to turn a case.
Yeah,
we share that.
Yeah, and with what you guys do, you keep people from getting sick so I don't have to see them.
True enough.
And that's huge. Like, anybody listening to this, I don't want to see you within my job. You know, I enjoy the opportunity. I've met so many cool people and had so many cool experiences in doing this. But, you know, it's never a good situation. So, like, I'm very interested in what you guys do, and I love it.
Today is about you, not about us. So let's go back to the...
Okay, let's talk about me.
we got these folks on the plane. Now they land in whatever, you know, Fairbanks or Anchorage or Seattle or something like that, and then they're trundled off to the hospital, right?
Yeah.
Then you've given up your part of the care,
yes,
to someone else,
mm-hmm,
right?
Yeah, so at that point, my partner and I high-five and we go get lunch.
And then you got to fly back home, right?
Yes.
It's not like you drop one off and pick one up. No.
Sometimes we do.
Really?
Yeah. If somebody's at a facility that needs to come home and we happen to be there, we've done backhauls before, and that's a situation that the hospital set up with our dispatch, and we've done that. Yeah. So.
Okay. So occasionally bring somebody back.
Occasionally.
Typically you don't, though, I imagine.
Yeah. Typically we don't. That's
Is there ever a limit on how many hours in a row that you can work at a time?
Yeah. So we have a pretty robust timeout policy. After 16 hours of flying, with less than 3 hours of interruption, so it's a mandatory timeout. So we time out for 10 hours. After 12 hours, it's optional. We can time out if we're tired. But if we get a flight that kicks our butt, if we get like a super critical patient or something that really just wipes us out, we can be like, hey, I need to take a break. I need to like decompress. I need to do this. I need to take a nap. They'll let us do that. So our dispatch and our management is very understanding of that, and you know, they don't question it when we need to take a break.
And I'm glad. And that's sensible, too. I could tell you guys got a culture of safety.
We do, very, very much. And I can't impress, like, how valuable that is to me. And, you know, be supported and being able to be like autonomous and make these decisions and not be questioned for it.
So, Ben, this has been a really interesting conversation. Yeah. And it, as always on this show, we're out of time.
Yeah.
And I have a zillion more questions. We're just going to have to hold off on it. Let me just end with my gratitude. Thank you for doing the job you do.
I appreciate that.
I really appreciate you being here. I hope I never, never, never need you. But if a time comes, I want someone like you. You or your twin helping manage my case, helping wrap me up like a burrito, get me on that plane and fly me down to where they're going to be able to sew me back together, right,
from
some crazy stunt that I've done.
Yeah, and if, if I'm doing my job right, you won't remember me.
Excellent, as it should be. And Dr. Brewster, thank you for being on the show. Thank you for bringing Ben in. I really appreciate that. I want to remind everybody that Craig Campo's outdoor show follows this, so stay tuned for it. This has been Health Talk. I'm your host, Dr. Scott Looper, medical director of White Spruce Medical, located at the Steese Medical Center right here in Fairbanks, where we treat gastrointestinal diseases such as diarrhea, constipation, gastritis, stuff like that. Stay safe, stay healthy, stay in touch.
You've been listening to Health Talk on KFAR Radio, brought to you by White Spruce Medical in the Steese Medical Center. To listen back to this or any past programs, simply log on to KFARradio.com and go to the archives page for more Health Talk. Local stories, local programs, local news, local talk radio. We are KFAR. You've been listening to Health Talk on KFAR Radio, brought to you by White Spruce Medical in the Steese Medical Center. To listen back.